From the Lynn DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 17th day of January, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at agmarket.net. We'll check the weather forecast with Don Day from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. There's cold weather on the horizon. It's a bit further out, but Don will give us a preview of what the end of the month might look like. And then as we close out our time together, Dave Chatter and we'll be here from Strategic Farm Marketing, sfarmmarketing.com online, to discuss the agricultural energies during this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today settled at $6.85 and a quarter. It was up 10 and a quarter. The May at $6.82 and 3/4, 9 higher. And December futures up a nickel and a quarter at $6.03 and 3/4 of a cent. March soybeans, $15.39 and 3/4, finished 12 higher. The May up 10 and a quarter at $15.37 and a half. And November soybeans, $13.93 and a quarter, 1/4 of a cent higher. Bean meal futures at $4.81.20, up $4.90. The bean oil, $63.84, 78 cents higher. Wheat futures soft red at $7.51 and 3/4, 8 higher for the day. The hard red, $8.55 and 3/4, up 12 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished at 160.10 in the April. That's down 80 cents. Feeder cattle, $1.57 and a half lower for 100 pounds at $181.30. And lean hogs, $88.12 and a half, up 85 cents. Crude oil for the day at $79.99, up 13 cents. Diesel fuel or heating oil, about 0.3 of a cent lower at $3.16 and 4/10. And the wholesale price of gasoline today at $2.54 and 6/10, around 0.8 of a cent higher. Some of the outside markets, the S&P 500 at 4,011 or thereabouts, around 7 points lower, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average off just about 360 points at around 34,000 for the day. Wayne Nelson of AgMarket.net now joins us to take a look at what's happened in Chicago after this MLK holiday weekend. Sometimes three-day weekends can change the marketplace to some extent. And of course, we had USDA report in the process as well, but it doesn't appear things have moved all that much. However, corn had a good end of the day.
Corn hit the highs in the post-trade in that last 5 minutes, where we used to call it the aftermarket trade, that way, coming along the way. You know, things were mostly higher today. I think, you know, somewhat inspired by the report last week and cutting things rather than raising things. We had solid export data today. And then the Argentine concerns, they're still pretty big out there. We had Michael Cordonera cut the bean crop 2 million metric tons from his last estimate, and the corn crop 1 million extra tons. So, but we are being led higher by the nearbys in both the corn and the beans.
And do you expect that to continue for the week?
I don't know that we'll see this much reaction, but I think we will continue to see the nearbys a little higher. It seems like the commercials right now are wanting to push forward and maybe own some of the nearby stuff, being a little more scared that if the weather would turn nice in Argentina and we would see things progressing along a little better and not maybe adding back in rather than subtracting every time we hear from Mr. Cordonera. But, along the way, two or three of the advisory firms today sold some new crop beans.
Oh, did they indeed? What are your thoughts on new crop sales, by the way?
Well, I think that, we were looking at some levels that we'd like to bounce back to anywhere in this, say, 610 to 620 plus. We're probably looking at moving a little bit of new crop, D's 23 corn and the beans. We can get back, 14, 20, something like that. We're looking to, continue to add a little bit to our sales.
And the global macroeconomics, what are the conditions most are talking about as it relates to China at this point? Maybe the Ukraine war, natural gas supplies in Western Europe, those sorts of things.
Well, I'll tell you what, the warm weather over in Western Europe has really, really, really helped the natural gas supply. They stocked up looking for a cold winter. And it hasn't been as cold except for the 1 week that was pretty bad. At our conference over the weekend, where we heard one guy that lived in England and in London, in fact, and he said the price to heat the house over there was about three times what it'd be usually because of the price of natural gas. But natural gas has been coming back down very hard as we look at it. That's a good thing for farmers, too, not just for drying purposes, but also looking at the anhydrous that we use natural gas produced too. So maybe we can get a little better anhydrous prices coming into the spring.
You were at the ADM event over the weekend. How'd that go?
Oh, it was quite good. You know, Dan Bassey was there. Fun to talk to him, you know, afterwards out there sideways. Besides what he said, he's, you know, a little bit iffy on wanting to sell a little bit some new crop if we can get up a little bit like that. But he has a lot of hope for he talked a lot about 26 soybean processing plants being added to the U.S. You know, over the next 18 months or so.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
That's Wayne Nelson. He is with AgMarket.net. In today's agricultural news, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley last week announced he intends to reintroduce the Farm Credit for Americans Act. The legislation bans the federal government from allowing foreign individuals to obtain credit and financial services through the Farm Credit System. Now, the Iowa Republican wrote the legislation with Senator Sherrod Brown, an Ohio Democrat. Specifically, the legislation prevents the Farm Credit Administration from underwriting foreign buyers seeking to purchase U.S. farmland. It would amend the 1971 Farm Credit Act to ensure foreign nationals cannot obtain financial through federal government-backed financial institutions to purchase American farmland. According to USDA, foreign ownership of U.S. farm acres increased 60% between 2009 and 2019. Increasingly, young and beginning farmers are competing with institutional investors as well, such as pension funds, endowments, and even professional athletes who are diversifying their financial portfolios with prime farmland. On the investment note, CHS and Cargill recently announced the intent to expand the scope of their joint venture, TIMCO, by adding the Cargill-owned export grain terminal in Houston, Texas. The addition of the Houston terminal will expand the joint venture's export capabilities, providing shipping access for grains, oilseeds, and byproducts through the Port of Houston. Well, food prices continue to rise, and they're outpacing general inflation again. Inflation slowed in December to 6.5%. That's down from the 7% in November. USDA economist Mac McLean says food prices rose nearly 10.5%, however, in December, while monthly
food increased by 0.3%.
Several factors are to blame. Market Watch reports the war in Ukraine continues to impact the prices of fertilizer and animal feeds. Avian flu and feed costs are limiting egg supplies and driving up those prices. And extreme weather continues to pressure other food prices. Again, here's McLean.
We do expect food prices to continue to increase into 2023. However, we expect that the rate of this increase will lie well below the very rapid food price increases we saw in 2022.
Beef prices have already come down, but egg prices surged by nearly 60% in December to an average of $4.25, more than a double the year ago, for a carton of grade A eggs. And finally today, the Social Security increase this year is welcome news for seniors, but it's followed by an increase in scam attempts. Michael Clements of the NAFB, National Association of Farm Broadcasting, reports.
Social Security benefits and supplemental security income payments are increasing 8.7% in 2023. This is the annual cost of living adjustment required by law, according to AARP Oklahoma State Director Sean Voskel.
Rampant inflation produced an 8.7% cost of living adjustment for Social Security beneficiaries in 2023, the biggest percentage jump since 1981. That translates into a $146 boost in the average monthly retirement benefit. Unfortunately, that means scammers are more eager than ever to steal money from seniors.
Voskel says scams include robocalls, letters, and more.
Scammers who impersonate Social Security Administration officials are adapting their pitches to the 8.7% increase, claiming targets have to pay a fee or provide personal or financial data to get their bigger benefits. They are trying to trick beneficiaries into providing personally identifiable information. However, the increase is automatic and recipients don't need to take any action to receive it.
Voskel offers these tips for when you think you might be contacted by a scammer.
Scammers seek to cause a strong emotional response, so stop and think. Better yet, hang up or ignore the message. Don't transfer money, be skeptical, and don't provide personal or financial data, even if the caller has some of your information already. Block unwanted calls and text messages, and don't click on links or attachments in texts or emails from unfamiliar senders.
Learn more Thursday night at 9 p.m. Central Time on RFD TV or online at aarp.org/AARP Live. Michael Clements reporting.
And I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. That's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's check the weather forecast now with Don Day. He's a day weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hi, Don. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's discuss weather here in the United States. Eventually, there may be some cool air that pulls over from the other side of the world, but I don't think that's happening at the moment.
Not at the moment, but changes, as we like to say, are afoot. The last of the series of big California storms is just about done, and the pattern across the lower 48 states and even parts of Canada since really just after New Year's has been dominated by a very strong and moist Pacific jet stream wind that's brought the heavy precipitation to the far west. But at the same time, it's also flooded most of the country with relatively moderate air, meaning really nothing too cold off the Pacific. But that pattern is undergoing some changes. And to your point, we don't see any real significant cold right now. But as we get into the 7 to 10-day period from now and beyond, most of the United States is going to be trending colder as we'll be talking less about the Pacific and more about influences from Canada.
What do you see over the next 2 weeks for us in particular then?
Well, as we make this transition change, we are going to see, at least here in the short term, a pretty good snow event go across some of the plains, Nebraska, parts of northern and central Iowa, southern Minnesota, and Wisconsin. They're going to see several inches of snow. In fact, parts of Nebraska can get over a foot of snow. And that we reach back in some winter wheat country of Colorado and Kansas as well. Now, most of that's going to stay to the north of the Corn Belt, but it will be a wet pattern developing as we work our way through the end of this week. So there's going to be some rain, some thunderstorm activity in the central and eastern Corn Belt, snow on the northwest quadrant of that. Where we do see the colder weather coming on in is going to be after that system moves to the east. So really starting late this weekend and into early next week, the Midwest Corn Belt will start to see some of that colder Canadian air seep in. And temperatures at the end of the 10-day period, so this would take us to late next week and towards next weekend, could be quite a bit colder than what we're experiencing now.
And then will we get really cold by the time we get to the very end of the month?
It's on the table. Not a lot of folks have realized or even known that temperatures in parts of Siberia, parts of Asia, you go back over to Iran, you go back over to Afghanistan, that part of the world, which doesn't usually make the world's headlines, they have been really cold. I mean, there has been some 70, 80 degree below temperatures in Siberia over the last week. Some of that cold air is going to make its way onto this side of the hemisphere. So I'm not saying we're going to go 80 below, but when you see temperatures like that and the ability for that cold air to finally work its way onto this side by the end of the month in early February, certainly your antennas kind of go up and say, all right, we need to keep an eye on this because the potential for some real cold is on the table by the end of the month.
Thank you very much, Don.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Don Day is with Day Weather. He's in Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. Now, there are a couple of things you'll find there this week. First, the Conservation Cropping Webinar is tomorrow, actually seminar. It's an in-person event. You can find all the details online. Just follow the link. I'll be emceeing and hosting that event from the Illinois Department of Agriculture tomorrow. And then on Thursday, I'll help to moderate the kickoff online version of the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. If you missed the Farm Doc team on the road, you can catch up with us each and every Thursday for six Thursdays in a row at 11 a.m. Sign up at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu or at willag.org. Thursday, we'll update the grain outlook with Scott Irwin and Joe Jansen. It's a Tuesday. We always check in on the agricultural energies. This week, Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign now joins us. Hi, Dave. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Todd. It's good to be with you. Happy belated New Year. So,
well, thank you very much. I do have a question because the Lunar New Year is here for China, but this question is not related to that. It's related to COVID there and the easing of restrictions, the opening up of the Chinese economy, relatively thinking. I believe that the prevailing thought among most was that China would see another decrease in economic activity because of this as COVID made its way through the population, and that maybe later in the year we might see economic activity pick up. However, I'm wondering if things happened more like they did in the United States, which is people came out once they were able to of their homes and went to the businesses, and they have been spending. Is that maybe what's actually happening?
Yeah, Todd, it's a great question. I think the pivot on China and the sentiment that surrounds that in the oil market's been the biggest mover or biggest, you know, piece of the price, you know, puzzle here of late. And we see that, I think the latter of what you said is correct. We've seen the initial surge come out and people kind of glad to be out from underneath it and coming out in droves to do things. I think it's a little too early to sound the all clear, if you will, and say that, hey, it's going to do that. But when you look at most of the what were the, you know, the Wall Street and the bank and the international global, you know, view on the reopening was that, hey, it was going to take 4 to 6 months for it to cycle through. It looks like that cycle is going to be compressed, you know, within maybe a 60 to 90 day time period. When we look at the December numbers that we had for China, certainly they showed improvement. You know, the refinery runs were up sharply. The crude oil demand or crude oil imports were up 4 to 5% in December, and I think leading the way to what we're looking at. And so, you know, the bet on, if you will, or the risk on here, I think, in terms of what we've seen in pricing for crude oil and for the refined fuels, as well as the bet on China, is that things are going to improve quicker. I think certainly there could be some fits and starts along the process here as we go, but the early data that we have kind of indicates that things are gonna lean towards the over versus the under.
Let's now talk about crude oil, its pricing, where you think it might be headed, how that impacts diesel, and what farmers should think about for their 2023 needs.
Yeah, so if you look at where we're at, I mean, the crude oil market essentially bottomed with the China pivot to a reopen in, you know, back in December. And we've been in a, you know, we'll call the crude range here something like a $70 to an $82 range. We're sitting here today at about just over $80 as you and I talk. And crude oil is actually on its eighth consecutive higher close, assuming that we close higher today here. So probably ready for a little bit of a setback, but in general, I think that range shifts from that 70 to 82, Todd, probably up to something like a 75 to an 87 type of a range here. You know, we've had OPEC, we've had the IEA, we've had several others go out, start talking about how strong oil demand in China could be. And when we talk about China, I mean, we've spent the most of the program so far, this segment, talking about China in relation to oil, but it's very similar to soybeans. I mean, they're just such a big user and one of the biggest importers in the world here that when they pull that trigger, it has a knock-on effect in price, very similar to what we would see in soybeans, so they kind of guide that ship. in terms of what it means for diesel fuel for farmers, hopefully you were able to take advantage of some lower prices here through last winter and coming into the first of the year here. If not, I would be, you know, I don't know, I'd rush out and do it today, but I would be looking for any kind of price weakness to get the rest of my needs, I think, locked up for the spring here. Todd, we're looking at average farm diesel, red diesel prices probably below $3.50 a gallon here still. You know, not necessarily on the lows that we saw earlier last year, but certainly haven't taken off that much.
In last week's USDA reports, the agency made some significant changes related to both supply, how much was actually harvested in the U.S., and also to demand of the export market, down 150 million bushels. However, they did not adjust the ethanol number, which many had suggested would take place. What is your assessment?
Yeah, well, the USDA does what the USDA does. At the end of the day, I think they do a good job of getting the picture right, but the process along the way can be pretty bumpy, and you know, January reports are known for that. If you look at the ethanol and the corn grind for ethanol to date so far in the marketing year, we are going to come up just short of that USDA target, probably something in the order of 25 to 50 million bushels. So whether that adjustment comes down the road, we'll see. When I look at 2022 gasoline demand overall in the U.S., we were down about 3% versus 2021. I don't see a big compelling reason to expect that to change coming into the new year. There's still talk of recession. I don't think our economy is going to be, you know, growing at an outsourced rate versus the rate hikes and the things that are probably in store here, at least in the first half of the year. So I think there's room for that number to come down. The USDA obviously, you know, kind of shot their bullet in terms of making the larger adjustments in terms of what they did with acreage, what they did with yield, and what they did with exports. But, you know, ethanol is something I think to keep an eye on here in the coming months here, and probably has a little bit of a soft bias to it in terms of the corn use.
Anything on some of the other natural gas or issues that we have been dealing with throughout the year?
Yeah, not really. We went through the winter storm in December. We've pretty much recovered from that. Natural gas has been on the way down. We're seeing European natural gas stocks actually at a record for this time of year. They did a good job of being prepared for the Russian situation through the summer, as well as, you know, getting lucky with the weather being warm there. We'll continue to kind of see what happens, but, you know, ethanol production margins here are barely hanging on, I guess. They're break even to slightly positive, and that continues to create the natural gas demand here in the U.S. along with the winter home heat situation. But other than that, we are watching propane still. Stocks there are very good. Prices have come up just a little bit here, but certainly no rush, I think, to be looking at propane for next fall at this point in time.
As we close out our time, different subject, because Strategic Farm Marketing is deeply involved in the crop insurance side of programs. I'm wondering what your meeting season looks like and what you folks are telling producers for the year.
Yeah, it's going to get busy here. We're going to start our meetings off this Friday with a virtual meeting, and then the in-person meetings start next week. You can find a list of those on our website if you're interested in that. But really what we're doing is compiling where we're at for crop insurance. From a marketing standpoint, Todd, on the grain side, I think we're looking at a situation where, you know, the USDA did us a big favor. They probably put a little bit of support underneath the market with what they did in the report here in the January numbers, and we're watching that in context of what it means for the final numbers coming out of South America, and particularly that Argentine production number. But, you know, the Chinese demand and how the U.S. crop goes in the spring are going to be the big determinants here. So we're in a situation where we've bought ourselves some time here to stay at these elevated prices, and whether or not we, you know, can move on and get on top of these or move above these, I think, is a little unclear right now. So we're keeping an eye on things. I think we have kind of a sell and defend type of a mentality here with a lot of profitability still in these types of numbers and some risk out here around the global macroeconomic environment.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
It's Dave Chatterton. He is with Strategic Farm Marketing. Find them online at sfarmmarketing.com. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.